Mike Souder was born in 1974 and raised with three sisters on a cattle and poultry farm in northern Pennsylvania. He's been married to Mercy for 16 years, and together they have three children, Emmett, Jude, and Eva. As a third-generation pastor with a Mennonite background, Mike has served for the past 12 years at Grace Covenant Church, a non-denominational congregation here in Harrisonburg, as associate pastor serving in a variety of capacities. After 7 years here at Eastern Mennonite University, should that be seminary?
Probably.
Yeah, seminary. 7 years here at Eastern Mennonite Seminary, Mike is excited to be graduating with his Master of Divinity degree and ready to have more time with his family and friends, and listen carefully here, and ironically, with God. Mike, come and present to us on Care and Connection, a vision for a relevant, not recent, church.
Okay. So, I said I'm surprisingly nervous. I feel like I've never been in front of people before. I just want to start by saying thank you to everyone here, everyone in this room. Thank you to my small group. Thank you to the seminary and my professors and friends here. Thank you to our church, and I've got our lead pastor and some of the other staff here with us. Thank you for releasing me to be here and paying for the vast majority of it as a church for me to be here. And most importantly, thank you to my wife, Mercy. I swear it was a family effort, and your consistent support, Mercy, is what's helped it actually work. I feel like we're stumbling over the finish line, but we're making it. So this is my wife, Mercy, and our three children, Emmett, next to my wife, our son, Jude, and our daughter, Eva. So the title of my capstone is Care and Connection, a Vision for a Relevant, Not Recent, Church. And my kids love our church. When we were driving the other day, we drove over 81, and my four-year-old daughter said, "That's the way we go to church." And even though that road that we cross takes us into Harrisonburg for essentially everything we do, for our shopping and doctors and the majority of our friends, my daughter defines it as the road that takes us to church. In our churches, we worship God and we connect with others, but beyond the physical spaces, churches are living organisms of people who lean on one another, bend and submit to one another, groups of people who laugh and cry, argue and challenge and support and lead one another to follow Christ. Now, my preschooler couldn't define it that way. All she knows is she loves the church. She loves the people. And as her father, I'm continually asking myself, what is it mean? What does it mean to truly be the body of Christ? This project is being prepared not only for my capstone, but for actual use in our church. Grace Covenant is a charismatic, non-denominational congregation comprised of around 1,100 English and Spanish-speaking persons from all over the world. As a part of my responsibilities in our church, I'm leading a team of six women and men, one of which Catherine Johnson, our children's ministry pastor, is a part of, to create a clear path that leads a person from a visitor to a fully engaged member. So in other words, to provide a plan for connecting and caring for people in our church. This sort of two-part plan includes both the integration of new members into the church and the simultaneous care for all members utilizing a sustainable small group care structure. So, like my four-year-old daughter, I also love the church. As a four-year-old, I remember falling asleep under wooden pews with my dad's heavy wool jacket over me while my parents worshiped and prayed into the night. This is a picture of our church. I don't know, that's all I could find. On their website, there's nothing but pictures of people. This is the only picture of a building. Interestingly enough, I noticed all those adults, this is 30 years ago, I'm I'm right there. 30 years later, all those adults are still in that church. So as kids, our lives were oriented around the long-timers and the short-termers who came through this group. Work and play and worship all kind of happened simultaneously. I was baptized in the same creek, the picture you saw at the beginning of our family. I was baptized in the same creek that we would play in and cool off after making hay on Saturdays. And as the child of an elder and interim pastor, I heard my parents ache and argue both with one another and with others over the hurt and confusion, the abuses of power, and offenses of all types. As a rebellious teenager, I discovered some kind of irresistible grace that would draw me back. And so I've grown not only to appreciate our church family, but the church with the capital Catholic, capital C church. And though I've only been actually a part of two churches in my whole life, this church and the church I'm a part of now, I've grown to appreciate all the different types. The huge churches and the tiny house churches, the mainline denominational churches, and the non-denominational churches, the Orthodox and the Roman Catholic, and even Mennonite churches, which are my own personal heritage. So my wife and others could tell you I am probably to a fault at times. I am in love with the church. Two metaphors used frequently in the New Testament to describe the church are that of a body and a bride. As Paul told the people of Corinth, the body is a unit. Though it is made up of many parts, and though all its parts are many, they form one body. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. And so in some mysterious way, Christians fit together as those who collectively follow Jesus as Lord of their life and need one another. We're incomplete without one another. Our strengths and our weaknesses serve to make us one being. And I believe this speaks powerfully to this emerging group of people who call themselves spiritual but not religious and have sort of self-removed themselves from the organized religion of the institutional church. And personally, I've never seen this end well. I've never seen a great deal of long-lasting fruit in it, and it really concerns me. The church is some kind of strange body of people which provides us this profound opportunity to belong to something larger than ourselves, a group of people that we would otherwise have no other reason to be with. And our cultural and personal distinctives are not to be ignored or repressed, but rather to be submitted to a higher ideal, a new order, new ethics of the body of Christ. The church is the bride of Christ. John the Baptist used this language. Jesus himself described himself as a bridegroom. Paul describes the radical nature of Christ and his love for the people, giving his life up for his bride, making her holy and perfect, and continuing to nurture and care for the church as his bride. And the prophets and the scriptures all throughout, the writer of Revelation also used this language of husband and wife, bride and bridegroom, to emphasize the intimate, monogamous, eternal relationship God would have with God's people. So the church is the body, the church is a bride, and in Acts we see what this actually looks like. You know, initially there are what, 120 believers after Christ leaves, and soon there's 3,120. But it was in their deep personal devotion to one another, their deep care and connection with one another, that they were really prepared for mission. And so the question remains for us, what does this mean for us today? You know, we live in a very different world. obviously, than the first century. We live in a different world than our grandparents, to be honest. And yet the care and connection that the local Christian church can provide is more significant than ever before. I believe we've become aware of several indicators at our church, at Grace, of some things that need to change how we provide care and connection for people in our church, people who consider us to be their church. Three things in particular have come to the surface that we need to address. The first is what I would call the revolving door. Over the past 5 years, and this is a hard thing for us to look square at in the face, but over the past five years, overall participation has remained relatively constant, even though we have an estimated 500 plus visitors every year. And so new people are either not staying at the church, or as they become a part of it, others are leaving at a similar rate. Newer people are reporting finding a hard time to plug in to the church. The second is what I would call the worn out jacket, or maybe the jacket's a little too small. We haven't, in some ways, properly adjusted to changes in the culture. Since the founding of our church 30 years ago, the overall model for how we care and connect for people has essentially remained unchanged. But in that same time period, a lot has changed, even in Little Harrisonburg. Dr. Steve McSwain, who I won't go into all his credentials, notes there are 7 trends impacting church decline, including, number one, and predominantly, the demographic remapping of the United States. And that meaning that we are less and less and less white, and we are becoming increasingly older, and yet our churches are not reflecting that. Secondly, there is the incredible and increasing influence of technology, and particularly social media, in that. And third, there is a leadership crisis among churches. Fourth, there is increasing competition for everyone's time and attention. Fifth, the ongoing challenge of religious pluralism. Sixth, the quest for a contemporary worship experience. What is that? What is the genuine, authentic, contemporary worship experience? And last, number 7, he defines the phony advertising, which McSwain notes millennials are particularly swift and adept in sniffing out and rejecting. So whether you agree with these trends or not, it's clear that the variety of shifts in our culture are something we need to address. Third, I would call the colander of care, something I feel like we're seeing. We're recognizing that some of our church members are receiving many different layers of care, while others are receiving little to none. Now, certainly, a certain amount of this is natural. Some of us have more relationships than others. You know, but when one person receives 10 visits in the hospital and one receives none, we have to start thinking, what is going on here causing this? And I believe this situation points perfectly to the weaknesses of quote-unquote organic ministry. Organic ministry is great when it works, but, you know, the idea that we'll all take care of one another all the time essentially can lead to no one taking care of anyone. And I believe that the Spirit can initiate not only spontaneous prophetic action, but the Spirit can also lead us in the strategic development of ministry systems that decrease the number of people falling through the cracks. So for the above reasons, we at Grace have defined the need to do something intentional and specific about this. We want to provide a plan for connecting and caring for people in the church. Not everyone wants this. Some people just want to wander around in the woods without a map. Some people want some kind of a map. And so the first point being connection, as the 20th century martyr Dietrich Bonhoeffer noted, the physical presence of other Christians is a source of incomparable joy and strength to the believer. Our working definition for connection is the opportunity to develop meaningful and transformational relationships with both God and other Christian believers. And it's our job as church leaders to make this path as clear as possible. Second, we define care as the opportunity for a person to both receive and give emotional, spiritual, and practical support within the church family, meaning that kids get cared for with other kids, but they're also integrated into larger things like small groups. And at Grace, we've defined 7 points that, maybe 8, I can't remember, are critical along the path for meaningful connection and care. And I was looking for different pictures that could represent this path, and that didn't work. It's too straight and pretty. And this path, you know, is curved and it's a little rough, but again, that's too soothing. This path is getting closer with the foreboding sky, but too many nice flowers. So I arrived at this path that kind of provides a background for what this looks like to walk together following Christ. First, we recognize the critical importance of our Sunday services as a place for people to be welcomed into the congregation. This is critical how we first connect with people here. Second, we're committed to initial follow-up within 48 hours with people, taking very seriously the information people give us about themselves. Third, we're excited about launching something new called a connection class. It's a 4-session class held quarterly, which introduces people to what our church is about, our mission, vision, values. And doing something 4 times is different from what we had been doing, which is just kind of a one-off meal, and this is who we are. So this is taking people a little deeper. The fourth is the assignment to care groups. And this is still very much in the development, but it's the idea that we want people to somehow be assigned to somebody who's going to at least check in with them periodically. The fifth, and probably the most important for both care and connection, is to see people connected to small groups. We believe care best occurs through the relationships established in smaller groups of people. The sixth is the participation in some type of healing. Priyanka did a great talk a little bit ago about the need to be healed in order for you to be able to serve well and belong in a holistic way to a community. Next is the ability to serve as a volunteer with children, youth, with prayer, with outreach, whatever. And last is the need for everyone and eventually to move towards either some form of leadership role or mentorship role. Now, I recognize that most people are not going to go exactly according to these steps, but for those who want to know what's the basic process that you would envision us walking, that's kind of the basic path that we would like to see people walk. And we're committed to ongoing sustainable communication with people to help them learn how to follow that path. Now, I want to recognize that, you know, systems and programs don't save people, don't heal people. But I'm personally a little tired of making excuses. I want to do something intentional to help people know what we desire for them to have in terms of a path to follow. We can't just assume that connection and care will happen sort of organically, particularly for newer people, introverts, people who don't know how to reach out or whatever. We need to provide them with something tangible that they can follow to become cared for and deeply connected. And I believe our 4-year-olds and our future 4-year-olds, they're looking for us to creatively design and lead faith communities that they'll love, even if they can't say why. Thank you. Any questions? Oh, you have a question? Yeah.
Mike, I'm wondering how the church is there to care for you as a pastor in this particular season of your life.
Well, that's a great question, Bob. So I would use this this picture for myself also to describe that. I have been here for a long time. I actually started 8 years ago. I took 1 year off when my mom passed away. So other than that, I've been in here for 7 years. And when I first heard that there was a capstone thing that we were supposed to present, for years I thought, well, my capstone will be about church planting or about some kind of international cross-cultural mission work, which I and my wife will be going into. And alas, it's not happening. At least it's not happening right now. It's not happening like this summer. And we've been through quite a bit of heartache over this thing, to be honest. Some disappointment, disillusionment, frustration. And our church has really been there for us through this. And I would say that the deep care and connection that we've experienced in our church through the leadership, through our friends, through all kinds of people, has been what's helped sustain us and help keep us from becoming overly angry at God or bitter or something. That the church has been there for us, helping us walk this path that leads to who knows where. And that's okay, because we're not alone. I really feel that. So, any other not pre-staged questions? Yeah.
This is not staged. Mike, it has been a joy to walk with you, even though you've been better this semester. And I enjoy having a preaching class with you and Merle.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we're all battling with him on the basketball court. Knowing some of what you've wrestled with
yeah.
staying and wondering what God's leading you to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you speak a little more about that? How you experience the Holy Spirit working in your not going, in your simply developing this project for the church that you're present in?
Yeah.
What inspiration?
Do you remember in Acts 6 where I can't remember if it said whether or not the Spirit initiated it or not, but there arose this need that certain widows and people weren't being cared for. And so there was like, we need to find some people to care for this. And they prayed and they came up with these new people to care for people. I think sometimes we relegate the Spirit to just spontaneous, weird, emotional stuff. When I believe the Spirit can tell us how to develop very clear systems, how to plan, how to be strategic. And so I believe the Spirit, you know, we begin all of our planning meetings inviting God's presence and inviting God's wisdom to speak to us. And I believe the Spirit speaks to us in how we develop things like this. You know? The Spirit can teach somebody how to develop that beautiful piece of whimsical art, right? But the Spirit can also lead the person who designed the concrete foundation that nobody's ever going to see for this building. So, anything else? I'm off the hook.
Yeah, right. So, 8 years ago.
Okay, the truth is that When God calls us to things, no matter how difficult, he somehow miraculously sustains us through it. God called us to this crazy journey, especially going more intense the last few years, and God has truthfully sustained us. So there is a very genuine thing happening there. At the same time, it's been really difficult. And I feel like a friend of mine said, it's like you're finishing the boxing match, but you're needing to have other people kind of hold you up because you just barely made it. I genuinely feel that way. My wife and I, we feel that way. We're freaking exhausted. And when Priyanka was sharing about self-care and that if we don't properly care for ourselves, our ability to care for others becomes pitifully low. I've begun to experience that. It feels like some of the beginnings of burnout. And yet, I'm not burnout. Like, we're going to make it. And partly what's sustained me is reaching out and saying, help, help, help. You know, there's a older woman in our congregation that my wife and I have submitted ourselves to for spiritual direction. I asked our church for a couple extra days off, and they gave me some extra time off. And so just looking for little ways, not just big, oh, when I'm done, I'll do a vacation. Looking for little ways each day to meditate in the car with headphones on the way in here. Take a walk, take a 6-minute walk up and back. Like, yeah, I'm looking for these little moments, these little tiny moments with the Lord. But ultimately, God's the one. That's one thing I've learned here at seminary. It's God's story. It's God's work. We're just a part of it, you know. Yeah.
So, Mike, I just want to say that as you're caring for yourself, just being you are is a support to other people you don't even know.
That's encouraging. That's true. Yeah. Thanks. That's helpful. Thanks, Rosemary. Thank you. Yeah, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin. The initial title of my little capstone was Care and Connection in the Large Church, because I felt like maybe I need to distinguish this from what happens if you got a congregation of 30. But then I started to think, no, these principles are necessary if you're 20 or if you're 20,000. I think they may be more necessary when you're 20,000. But if you're a church of 20 and you don't properly greet people when they show up on Sundays, if you don't try and get their contact information and follow up with them, if you don't make sure they're integrated in some other space than just Sunday morning, you know, if you don't do all these things, no matter if it's a church of 20 or bigger, their personal formation, their discipleship, their healing is going to be real shallow. So, I mean, obviously, every church is going to have to uniquely contextualize this kind of thing for themselves and develop their own plan for care and connection. But I do think a lot of those points are somewhat universal. And even just the idea that we need to make it clear for people, as opposed to just come in, everything will be great, and just, you know, does that help at all? Okay. Thanks, Nate.
We're ready to get out.
Yeah.